more things I used to do. I don't do no more, for the Lord's made a change in me.
This is Real History with Melissa, and today I'm really glad to have back for a third Real History, Osman. And I spoke with him, I think, in 2023 and again in 2024. He has an interesting background. He was born in Uganda, and his father was a diplomat, and they had to flee the country. He was raised in London. He's been in Africa a lot. He's had a very interesting life, doing lots of interesting things. And we talked about a bit of that on those two Real Histories. But he had mentioned, I think in the first one that we did in 2023, that he had gone to university and studied something called bioinformatics. And I didn't really have a clue what that was. And this was years ago. And he made a reference, I think, in the Real History, something to the effect of, I just studied it because I was interested in it. And once I got deeper into the studies, I could sort of see where I might be going with this as a career. And I decided that was not for me. But he got in touch with me recently and said that he wanted to talk a little bit about that. And I do too, because I think that our data collection, the analysis of our data, how it is used, really, I'll just say it, against us, is very interesting in the world that we're going into. And the artificial intelligence would seem to be able to make the rapid analysis and organization of data, and then the utilization, and you can say weaponization of it, to be quite seamless and probably automated easily. So I've got a lot of different questions, and I think the way that we'll proceed is just, first of all, to start by telling you, what is bioinformatics? What does it consist of, and how is it used? And then we'll just launch off into a conversation there. And then I have to tell you, Osman, that just in researching this just a little bit, which was really just a little bit, I discovered that it said, this is, I don't think that it's feminist week, but I'm going to have to tell you that it was an American biophysicist by the name of Margaret Bell Dayhoff, who was the pioneer in the field of bioinformatics. And she has a very interesting background. She was a professor at Georgetown University and a biochemist at National Biomedical Research Foundation. But she was the first to do substitution matrices, and she created, I believe, point accepted mutations, PAMs, or PAM, and also came up with a one-letter code for amino acids. So a very interesting woman, and also, of course, did her postdoctoral studies at Rockefeller Institute. Now, there were two people who popularized this and came up with the term bioinformatics in the 70s. And again, and one of those was a woman too. She was from Holland, I think, as I recall. So it really took off as a discipline in the 1970s. And it comprises, so just showing you how I did my homework, it comprises computer information and organizing computer technology and making software programs, and mathematics and biology. And so now you can tell me a multitude of things I got wrong, and also the things that you know. And we'll just introduce people, first of all, to what it is. And hello and thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. It's good to be back on. Actually, talking about this subject is it's kind of fun. You're 100% right. It's women tend to be at the forefront of this field, shall we say. That's the only way of describing it. For example, I mean, bioinformatics is just a subset of the degree I did, which was biochemistry. And even now, I'm very proud of saying I did a degree in biochemistry because bioinformatics is just a small thing. Surely it's just a small thing, right? It's just all this information and nobody can really use it. But it's going to become relevant. Just think of that, all of this information and nobody can use it. I'll come back to that. So when I did my degree in so the higher up you go, I don't know why, statistically it's more women. So I was in a lab with myself and another guy, and it was, I think it was 14 ladies. So,
Good, great.
and that's pretty normal in biology, actually. So some are geneticists, some are biochemists, some are immunologists, they all go off and do some are neuroscience, they all go off and do things in biology. But beyond that, at the PhD level, again, there's a lot of females, but it tends to be men who disperse the money. So I always thought that because we were all in one building, it's like the guys with the PhDs, the sort of decision makers who disperse the grant money were on a top floor, like the 10th floor or something. There was an atrium. It was a place called the Institute of Medical Sciences. So at the ground level, nobody can get in without the appropriate ID, right? So even us humble sort of final year undergraduates could get in. Maximum we could make it to like the second floor. So the whole lab thing was in another building, and there was another building somewhere undisclosed where the animal testing went on. So this thing is big business. Even at that level, it's big business. So there's money being distributed. Money comes from pharma, money comes from government. All those 10 floors, guys have nice offices at the top. You have to commit to this industry, right? So what you said previously, I mean, I could see it physically, Why would I go higher than the third floor? I mean, there's a great big world out there. I could be out there, it was so, for me, it was very easy. It wasn't like a, and I'm still very young at that point. So, a lot of the people who do the degree, some go off and start again, become physicians to another 7 years, medical training. Others go off into random things like construction. I know a lady who was a neuroscientist, master's level, but she ended up in London working for a big construction firm. So it's supply and demand, all that kind of thing. We're just replaceable, right? So that kind of makes sense. Or it doesn't make sense, but bioinformatics is just this base level of information, and somebody has to make sense of it. And you could line up different genotypes, so different species. And the first time I encountered it was lining up just a small part of the human DNA with chimpanzee DNA. And the professor says, well, it's 98% the same, but there's this 2% which is very different. And then he had a small computer program for different sections of the DNA, different parts, different sort of things to be made, different proteins, whatnot. And lo and behold, it lines up. He could slide the things next to each other from the different organisms, and they would line up except for the base pair here, base pair there, a couple of base pairs here, different. And you say, this is very sort of, now looking back, I think they were just trying to indoctrinate us, you know, into thinking this is a system. This is like it all works. The professor obviously knows what he's doing, you know. Surely the chimpanzee and the human are very closely related. But you got to doubt that, right? The chimpanzee is very strong in a way that humans are not very strong. And the humans, well, they've got all these abilities, you know, they can make 400 tons of aluminium fly in the air and go to another country. That's not saying anything about organizing countries and all that kind of thing, right? So taking a step back is very hard when you get into bioinformatics because you're just dealing with this base layer of information. But let's say you buy in, right? So you go from the ground floor to the first floor and you're in there, you're a believer. You're going to say to yourself, so we're going to do something with this information. We're going to infer something, right? So this organism, and the other one there are related and they behave in a certain way. You've already assumed something, right, about behavior and the real world. It's purely your imagination, I would say, because every so often you come up against a surprise. And as we were saying before we talked, I mean before it went live, whilst I was doing my degree, they sort of changed their minds on junk DNA. There was this thing called junk DNA. Didn't do anything. And then halfway through, they said, oh, it does things that we never knew. It actually encodes for certain information, proteins of that do special things, you know? Maybe under special circumstances. Who would have guessed, right? So these guys more or less are detached from reality. And they're incentivized. See, so incentive is at the core of how humans behave. There's a lot of money in this, coming from government, coming from big companies that are focused specifically on human, shall we say, health, you know? And so, yeah, to go from this base layer of information to infer something and then to have a product. It's not really possible just with, you know, our natural abilities. Doesn't matter how clever you are, you need a computer. So computer science came in a big, big way. Let's say around the turn of the century. And now it's at a level where, of course, I don't call it artificial intelligence. I call it sort of advanced algorithms. We can read this DNA and say, well, this worked over there. It must be the same as over there. But DNA is so big that even AI is not going to be able to have a reference because no human ever saw this before, right? I don't think people appreciate that. They oversimplify biology, because they don't get out. They don't get to see the world.
Let me ask a question. Do you think that the idea behind the hype around what AI is going to be able to do with biology and specifically the human genome, do you think that that's because the idea is that there's going to be pattern recognition with artificial intelligence, large language models? I mean, I heard one professor hyping on about I think is it Google's using thing,
DeepMind.
DeepMind, yeah, all the things that DeepMind had been able to do. Is this part of just the hype? Or is there some reality there
100%,
that
100% there's hype, you know? I mean, why wouldn't there be? It's in their self-interest to hype this up. So you have to be like really sober-minded to say, oh, there is very small chance of them knowing how life behaves in situ, in vivo, shall we say, like in a little experiment. Life is very resilient, it's probably seen all kinds of cataclysm and yeah, there's this base layer of genetic information, but even what does that mean even, So I remember being on the cusp of a sort of passing and failing at one point as a first year, and I was quite new to biology. I never did it before that. I'd been into physics and chemistry and geology, that kind of thing. That was my what
Geology
made me
was
to.
what you were going to start with, right? Is that, do I remember that right? Geology was what you went in
Yeah,
for.
and I stumbled into biochemistry just because I just saw the future. It's like I could see 20 years into the future where they would decide what was permissible and what was not. What was, viable and what was not. It was like a series of lectures by a silver-haired professor in front of 600 of us, first years, and I was like, this is amazing. He can't be serious. So I had to find out, right? And then I did find out, and there's big money behind it. There was money coming from the European Union, hundreds of millions worth. There was one of our lady professors who was getting a lot of money from Brussels. And I think, if you're able to sell yourself, if you're able to play that game, if you're able to sort of say, well, I'm gonna make a something glow in the dark randomly just by borrowing a gene from somewhere. You could have made a huge amount of money, and that's exactly what they did. But that's not what I was looking at. I was looking at this other thing way into the future where you would sort of say certain molecules have to be around, by regulation. Nobody's ever going to say that explicitly, but I think that's where we are now.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, not that I want to be controversial, but the whole
Oh.
mRNA technology came about in the mid 80s. So there was like four or five scientists who were in that space. And Big Pharma had to wait 30 years to acquire that technology because the patent ran out. And so we're talking 2005, something like that. I may be wrong, but this is exactly how it happened. So mRNA is just a process. It's just a way of reading that base information and turning it into something, right? But what if you can sort of tweak the base information, which is easily done, and then the mRNA reads it and makes a new product, which is also easily done. So that new product is intellectual property of somebody. And let's say that somebody's very powerful, can speak to the regulator at the golf club. And well, yeah, so then we're not anymore talking about inference of the base information and morphology. We're just talking about business, like any business. Somebody's got to make money, but how do they make money? You've got to drive this thing. You've got to sort of get the demand going, now I make no judgment, Melissa, but this is not exactly a wholesome business, is it?
One of the ways in which they're hyping up bioinformatics well, one of the ways they're hyping it up is that they can do designer drugs just for you.
Oh, to make your skin softer and that kind of thing, of course.
Whatever,
But I
anything, you
mean,
know.
yeah, but I mean, lately I've been wondering, how culpable, how responsible is the consumer? Probably in a big way, the consumer is responsible because it's their dollars, right? It's their focus, their interest. But does that make it any less bad, what's going on? I don't think so. I reckon, this is too easy, like you're pinning the label of biology on just the most crass transaction imaginable, right? Whereas if it was biology, you'd be trying to work out how the crocodile, shall we say, in the Nile has a third eye, and some apparently extinct creature from like the North Atlantic also. The third eye is like just to make sure they know where up is. It's similar to our inner ear. But yes, there's lizards that have a something called a parietal eye. This is 100% coded for in biology, but nobody in bioinformatics cares anything about that. Nobody in big sort of artificial intelligence cares about that. They only care about, whatever people want to buy, right?
Well, is it?
So.
I never stop with the consumer and the greed and the big business aspect of it. I always want to find out what is the control or the depopulation component of it, or massive control of a population, because I just don't think that they're doing it so that they can sell a lot of face cream to women to make their skin softer. The same way that they say, they'll deliver,
Maybe.
medicine that's just special, it's just designed for you. I'm always looking at the, I'll just say it, the kill component.
Well.
What in the technology, if we've ascended all the way up to the top floor of the atrium building where you entered into, what is it in the technology that is the most nefarious application that you can think of?
I actually don't think anything nefarious happens by plan at that level, so the guys, all of the PhDs, all of the they're very well remunerated. They live comfortable lives. They go from university to university. There's no reason to rock the boat. They're true believers. They've blocked out everything else, politics, or well, they have their own politics, I guess. They don't foresee a crisis. They don't foresee any sort of peril for humanity. So that's how they think. What you're talking about, where there is a real peril, real sort of cataclysm for people, I think it happens. Sad to say, but by default, because things stop coming to the consumer. Now, I don't know how that happens because I've never seen it, but I think that's exactly how it's going to happen, because you have to say, all of this comfort, all of this making your skin softer, and all of these sort of synthetic products. Not necessarily all synthetic, but lifestyle aids, put the consumer in a mindset where they are super comfortable, right? And the moment that stops, well, that's stress, right? Or super stress, or downright personal sort of catastrophe. So that's what kills, In short, stress kills. So I reckon that's how it would go. It isn't exactly. Yeah, it's funny, but funny is not the word. But in biology, they always tell you, oh, there was a bottleneck at some point. Something happened, and there was only this many organisms left. They never tell you how exactly it happened. Or say it was a volcano or some such. But humans, from in my experience, they're endlessly resourceful. But you could always say, we've been hugely subsidized since the some point in the last century, where you had science do its thing, where you had fertilizers coming from natural gas, making you grow more food. So I would say you don't have to look far. It's sort of things come to an end, which would really sort of shake humanity up, as opposed to the obscure, aka bioinformatics. AI is just a It's just an interloper, or advanced algorithm. By the way, you have to have special software for biology. Hence the mathematicians we talked about before. They come in, they don't really need to know about biology. They just see this pattern and think, oh, I know what's going on here. Let me make sense of it.
Yeah, the what is the there's the one big software, I forgot the name of it. It seems like it was named after a snake, or
Blast.
well, there's
So
BLAST, but
blast is a
there's,
process.
yeah, BLAST is a process, but there's a software that people specialize in. I couldn't remember the name.
Yeah, Python.
Yeah, Python. Okay.
Yeah, but Python is it's general for all programming. I'm not a programmer myself. I'm not inclined that way, bizarrely. I'm more into bikes and that kind of thing. The real world. But yeah, Python is just a language. It's not very hard. If you apply yourself, you can sort of program things.
Well, it just, I was listening to a professor lecture on it, and she said, you may spend your whole bioinformatics career just doing Python, or you may just be focused on one part of the process that is BLAST. I forgot what BLAST stands for, but I'll.
And honestly, it's just lining up the different, that's all it is. It's just lining up the different DNAs, the different base information.
Yeah,
But you
basic
need,
local alignment search tool. That's it,
yeah,
isn't it?
so that's all it is.
Yeah.
But make sense of that. It's like hieroglyphics, right? How would you know what that makes, in the real world? You wouldn't. Even with Python and any sort of software, you wouldn't know what that makes in the real world. Not with confidence,
Right.
aka what I was saying to you before we recorded. It's fuzzy logic, which is a branch of mathematics that nobody's really into. So it's either zero or it's one or it's in between, but you don't really know. So how omnipotent are you, small human? You're not really omnipotent. You're in this game to make money, more or less. So that's where I arrive at things. Everybody's in it to make a bit of money. Nothing wrong with making money. I was speaking to one of your compatriots the other day, and he says, "Oh, I'm a capitalist. I'm not against anybody making money," and he's made a fair bit of money, which is good for him. But you kind of get the feeling that he's looking for something else, right? That's always unsaid. So there is the something else. In bioinformatics, there's 100% the something else, because they're stuck lining up these things that make no sense. I mean, it would be just the biggest farce, like the best comedy show you've ever seen, if it wasn't for the money and the adoration they get from the rest of humanity. it was always obvious to me, like from the beginning, but
Well, I'll
nice,
bet.
interesting subject.
Yeah, I'll back up
But
just to.
you need to get back to the real world.
Yeah. I'll back up a moment and just give a. This is just a wiki definition of what it is. It says it's an interdisciplinary field of science that develops computational methods and software tools for understanding biological data, especially when the data sets are large and complex. Bioinformatics integrates principles from biology, chemistry, physics, computer science, data science, computer programming, information engineering, mathematics, and statistics to analyze and interpret biological data. This process can sometimes be referred to as computational biology. However, the distinction between the two terms is often disputed. The term computational biology can refer to building and using models of biological systems. Then it goes on to tell you all of the different things that it can do. But here's what I find interesting. It says it is its main thing is extracting results that are useful from a whole bunch of data. So you've got a whole bunch of data. What do you do with it? And one of the things that I was considering here is for all of this data collection that's going on, and we've got data centers popping up everywhere. And people are talking about, like, somehow this has to do with us sitting at home and interacting with Claude, which I think nothing is further from the truth. But I'm trying to understand, you've got military applications, you've got drone applications, there's all kinds of applications why you would need a data center, and lots of them popping up everywhere. But the organization of large amounts of biological information that's collected on us is one of them. Has to be, right?
Well, yeah, but what can you do? And I get where you're coming from. Yeah, a security sense. That's not really bioinformatics per se. That's not looking at the base information to do something with it. It's looking at the phenotype, the top level creature, and saying, well, this DNA belongs to so and so who lives in a that street over there, right? Just happens to be a human. We're not talking about horses, right?
Well, could it also be genotype, meaning that person phenotypically lives over here? We can identify him, we know where they live, but we can now access them or their their digital twin online, and we can actually insert some information that changes that person. Is that possible? You can certainly change somebody's medical record.
Yeah, but I mean, well, let's put it this way, right? If you guys speak in pounds, right? So let's say you're like a
Dollars.
300.
Pounds. Yeah,
Yeah,
pounds. Yeah.
let's say you're a 24-year-old guy and it's 300 pounds, right? And you live a certain way. And then one day, you just start eating fast food, which you never did before, right? Automatically, the base information response at the biochemical, bioinformatics level, shall we say, it responds, and the guy becomes, overweight.
Well, if he started out at 300 pounds, he's already pretty hefty. So,
No, let's say he's even bigger. Let's say he was he was in good condition. So the thing is, you can change people just by the environment. You don't have to go to the base information level and intervene with, because it's not cost effective. Just take them to the fast food establishment,
Well,
right?
I mean, not cost effective, but if we're to believe that they are where they say they are on sequencing
Oh no, believe me,
cost-wise.
then they're not. Believe me, they're not. See, you've got to cut through the hype.
Okay.
That's more or less where I am. So you line up all of this different information. What are you going to do with it, right?
Right.
So there's like the five or six corporations who have the wherewithal to make money from being in this space, right? And even they are hyped up. Your real sort of cause for concern is politics and regulation. Just to be a devil's advocate, politics and regulation may not be bad people in themselves. You should hear me out. You should hear me out, you know. Maybe they're being paid unduly. Maybe they're being influenced unduly, you know. So this base information really doesn't mean anything outside of the university. It's just, once it gets outside, it's just hype. It can do this, it can do that. But even if you start, doing genetic engineering, we did that in our first year. You know, we take genes from one organism, put it in the other, wait a week, and we had bacteria glowing. You know, proud to say mine were glowing. Some people didn't manage it. From some exotic sea squid. But yeah, the professors really enjoy that kind of stuff. Some of them make money out of it. Oh, you know, there's a marker here and it's over there, oh, let's use it in cancer research. Let's do this, let's do that. It's actually so small that it's irrelevant, in terms of what you were talking about, influencing humanity in a big way. The people who influence humanity, as usual, are, in this game, the regulator and politicians. And of course, the aforementioned guys with money, who can pay them. So that's kind of what I see. Putting the squeeze on people in terms of like lifestyle and that kind of thing, it's just availability, right? Now, I will say this, I think the whole crisis in 2000 to 2022 was interesting because there was a whole year where they said, well, it's going to be this intervention where, you know, people have to take this thing. And I thought, really? You know, are people going to, they did take it, you know, in their droves. For me, that was eye-opening. But it was eye-opening because that's when I realized it was the politician and the regulator and the media and the big company. But you could substitute the big company for any industry. Doesn't
Right.
have to be biology,
Right.
right? So there's a process there that always works, that always must be followed. So yeah, bioinformatics is just sliding the DNA next to each other, you know. You could become a programmer. You could have started off as a mathematician. You're never gonna get the answer to life or this variety, this sort of I'll tell you a funny story, if you indulge me, Melissa. So when I was doing my degree, an actual first year, again, we did this thing called cytogenetics. It's the study of chromosomes, right? And I never been so scared in my life, like scared, repulsed kind of thing. It's the most disturbing business you ever seen, right? So it's chromosomal faults that may happen in humans, typically during pregnancy, and you know, the child comes to term. And so the professor was up there again in front of 600 of us, and he would say, oh, this is Edwards syndrome. This sort of fetus doesn't last 6 days after birth, right? And then this one doesn't last 14 days after, and this one doesn't last 2 days. And the pictures were up there and the sort of faults. So typically we know Down syndrome. But he gave me a whole list of me, not only, but the all of the guys say, and girls, because girls get to the top of biology, as I told you. All of these chromosomal faults, and I'd never heard of any of them except Down syndrome. But as he said, the pictures were horrific. Some had six fingers, the eyes were like this or whatever. I mean, you can look it up yourself and see and verify that it's horrific. But as he said, they don't last way beyond term, just a matter of days. Now, funny is not the word, but I traveled to East Africa from London and I landed, and there's like a basically a security guy. One of these guys that works for the authorities in unforment, unmentioned African state. And the guy had all of the features of Edwards syndrome, but he must have been 30, right? There he was, right down to what I could see was an extra finger. Now, if you think I was scared as a first year, that freaked me out, right? So I went through immigration and I said to myself, is that really possible? The professor told me they can't really exist beyond 5 days. Lo and behold, they can. So what does the professor know? So that kind of made me realize that, yeah, the confidence, the arrogance, the sort of certainty that no, it's nonsense. And probably I did make the right decision to leave that space and try and get in, get amongst it in the big world. And
Well,
now here I am.
there's one thing that they're, the way that they've hyped up what they can do with DNA testing, for example, is we, what we can really do now, they say, is we can tell you if you're going to be predisposed to a certain disease or if the baby that you're carrying has a certain disease. And I've seen this play out time and again as just not being factual. I had a friend years ago who went and got whatever tests they did on her, and the doctor told her that the baby that she was carrying had trisomy 13. And it's I let's see if I can get that one here. It's not Down syndrome. It's okay. It's called Patau syndrome, a severe chromosomal disorder caused by the presence of an extra copy of chromosome 13 in some or all of the body's cells. It occurs in approximately 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 20,000 live births. Now, that's a pretty high number, especially if you go with the lower 1 in 10,000, and is associated with significant physical and intellectual disabilities, including holoprosencephaly, which is a brain malformation, cleft lip or palate, worse, polydactyly, what you're talking about, extra fingers or toes, and congenital heart disease. And her doctor advised her to abort the baby, and she chose not to. And that her baby was perfectly healthy, just finished university. So there's those kinds of stories all the time, because we said this off camera, but Alan has said it repeatedly. Scientists are the new priesthood. So if the scientist or the science tells you that your baby has trisomy 13, then you're supposed to go home and cry and say, well, I've got to have an abortion. So there, and something that I read, unfortunately, I didn't have time to read the whole article before we spoke, but there's a book out, and I don't know anything about the author or anything at all, but it's called The Genetic Deception. And all of the ways in which they've gotten it wrong, but the hype is there. So that if the doctor says it's, the mutation is genetic, we've got a disease and it's genetic. And what they're showing in the actual work is that, for instance, oh, the thing that you have that they say predisposes you, the gene mutation or malformation that predisposes you to X, Y, or Z, may not be at all as significant as what is being hyped. And a famous instance of this is the actress Angelina Jolie. She had a double mastectomy probably a decade or more ago because she had learned that she was genetically predisposed to breast cancer. And so she had both of her breasts removed because of that. And she did a big ad campaign and a big and now with actresses, I mean, quite frankly, I'm going to say this cynically, we have no idea if that's true or not. I have no idea if Angelina Jolie had a double mastectomy, but this is what we're told. And in this book that I just referenced there, they said that the predisposition to breast cancer that Angelina Jolie said was so high is less than 50% of the cases that it actually mutates into anything, let alone full-blown breast cancer. So these are examples of, how we're enthralled by the science when the science is just a marketing tool, more or less.
Well, yeah, that's the conclusion I've come to, but I didn't come to it by thinking about it. I came to it just by being around them, being in that space. And it's funny because like people ask me, "What did you study?" And I say it, and people think, "Oh, you must be very, very intelligent." And I think I don't think more than your average person, but I was just always curious. I was always asking questions as a child. I happened to end up in science. But if you gave me a choice, I would stick with the Newtonian mechanics, physics, that kind of thing, chemistry, because at least it's practical. Depending on what mood you're in, like you can actually do stuff with it. With this, you have to be in the gang. To not be cynical about things, you have to be in the gang. If you're not, you're an outsider, you're gonna more or less criticize them, but in some quiet corner where nobody can hear you. It's like a it's in a way it's amazing, like that they can sort of perpetuate themselves and scare people and get paid. Sadly, that's how it goes. Cancer, as you mentioned, I remember the film star sort of going through this kind of thing. I was a bit horrified. I honestly can't remember. I mean, she's fame. She Angelina Jolie is famous, more or less for being famous, right? I cannot remember any film
Who's
that
famous?
I've watched that she's in.
Yeah, who's famous for being
Look.
famous is Kim Kardashian, but Angelina Jolie's been in some movies, maybe Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and I'm trying to think
Oh,
of,
she's no, she's certainly famous. I mean, she is, and I remember like what you describe on the news, and This has to be, it has to be one of the most horrific things because think about this, right? We talk about the genotype and you infer something and then you have the creature at the top, you know, the full expression of all this information. And we don't know what this information is, by the way. For Angelina Jolie or for some guy down the road who is a road sweeper. But at least universally, she's regarded as a, you know, a good looking human, you know? So if you're gonna do statistics, it's quite unlikely she gets breast cancer today, tomorrow, or the day after. But that whole thing was a it's not fair to, you know, maybe she bought into the hype and feared for her life. I would never know. I cannot answer that, but
I don't know. I mean, what one thing that we are told about her is that she's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, as is George Clooney. So she's been brought in to do some kind of a function in one of the inner circles. And another publicity stunt that she participated in was saying that her children eat bugs, you know, crickets and things like that. So you know, so maybe it's just a star junket, you know, a little publicity trip that she goes on from time to time with different,
well,
I don't know. Or
no.
maybe she was afraid she was going to get breast cancer. I have no idea.
Either way, she's famous and she's in a position to generate hype or push the agenda, whatever the agenda may be, right? And curiously, people buy into it. So that's why I go back to
The consumer.
what I was saying. Yeah, so like I said in the beginning, it may be relevant. I think what we're looking at is a pattern, right? Not only the sort of the genetic information, which may be used to, you know, for data purposes, for sort of social organization, that has nothing to do with bioinformatics per se, sort of biomedical bioinformatics being a sort of a basis for all kinds of information that tells you about life. It can be a thing for social control because, you know, you've got the idea of somebody. You just process them. You've got very easy, you know, computer-wise to say, well, that's so and so. Far more efficient than a fingerprint and all kinds of stuff. And I think that's where the sort of where the application's going. The whole subculture, the subsect subsector, probably, what I used to study and what is being studied right now. Is a niche, I think. That's not to say scientists don't have status. They certainly do. I'm fascinated by TV scientists, you know. I can't really think of any at the moment because I don't watch television much, but there were TV scientists like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And these guys can push society in any direction they want
Yes.
because
Yeah. And TV doctors too. Yeah.
exactly the
Yeah.
same,
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I don't know, there's something about humanity that wants to buy into the hype, that wishes to see people with status. Humanity that hasn't really put in the hours, you know, that hasn't done a bit of science for themselves or lived in those environments one way or another. Which is a shame. It's probably why, you know, you have mass media events like professional sports or all that kind of thing, you know.
Well, I kind of thought, it's too bad that the general public doesn't get a better basic science education. But one time a while back, I was considering that, and I thought, I suppose it's like not wanting the people of a church or the Catholic Church in particular to understand Latin. So
Yeah,
you just want to give them the mass in Latin, but they have no idea what's being said. And this is really it. When you listen to scientists talk, it's a different language.
absolutely. You have to learn a jargon. It's true. It takes months to learn the jargon and to be confident with this jargon. That's why I could say to you, BLAST is just sliding things next to each other. And looking for differences. I mean, after all these years, I remember all the jargon. It's useful, but the jargon pulls you in. You're one of the gang, basically, because you know the jargon, and that makes you different from the public until you rebel. It's kind of. Education would be good, but you also have to be inspired because it's not easy to do science related things. You have to be typically very young, and you have to put in many, many hours to understand certain things, to understand certain, and you have to have the right kind of teachers, and I understand that's not possible for everybody. It was certainly possible here in London, which is where I grew up. So I'm able to sort of make an informed decision about certain things. And hopefully I can sort of communicate that with other people. But I've discovered that that's not really possible because they don't really understand the basis of how I came to how I arrived at that conclusion.
Speaking of that, how did you find it during the big operation of 2020 to 2022? I mean, what was it like to try to convey what you were seeing and thinking to people that didn't have a science background?
It was almost impossible. I think maybe I made headway with two or three people I know. I mean, close friends, maybe maximum two people. Other than that, there were people who listened and then came back to me after 6 months and said, something's not right here. But I had almost no impact. Didn't matter if I talked about the mechanisms, the base information, how mRNA reads things and makes proteins, junk DNA, all of the things that I encountered a long time ago. The idea that mRNA technology was some creature of the mid 1980s, almost as old as I am, it's quite amazing. But nobody cares really. If they're in fear, they are going to stampede, and I just had to get out of the way. And actually, more than changing them, I think I was changed in that time and space.
In what ways?
Well, I was finally confronted with humanity in perceived peril, sort of. You don't want to be the person in the way, much as you don't want to be the person leading them on to. We had this thing here in the UK where they used to go every Thursday night, 8 p.m., beat pots and pans. It was a very
Yes.
Spanish thing. It was a very, very Spanish thing, Spanish protest thing. Never happened here. Not that it hasn't happened again, but they would go on their balconies because they're not allowed to leave their dwellings. And they would beat pots and pans in honor of
Workers, yeah.
I know a medical workers actually, but it wasn't the medical workers; it was the medical workers' employer. So, It was amazing. So yeah, it wasn't easy. Kind of changed me more than I would ever hope to change anybody. But you live and learn, you know.
Well, how did you cope with it? I mean, psychologically and mentally, and not being able to.
I was quite lucky. I was allowed out. I worked, as irony would have it, in a big campus where Google DeepMind live. Not directly for them, but for the company which maintains the site. I'd literally just come back from Tanzania and was hoping to go back to Africa, but a lockdown and everything happened, and I found myself working for this property company in a place called King's Cross, which was kind of fun at the time because a friend of mine lived quite close to that place, a guy I grew up with. So if I was fortunate, I'd go and see him. He wasn't allowed out, but he would sort of make himself present where he lived. You are allowed to exercise that kind of thing, you know? But yeah, it was empty. Google Mind was empty. It was, you know, for my sins, I ended up in a big technology park in London.
Little purgatory.
It was interesting. At the time, I was quite glad for it because the streets were empty. I mean, the place has like huge boulevards and it was completely empty. So it was an adventure. I like adventures. So then they released the people 6 months in and then locked them up again. So,
That's what
and
happened. That's what happened in Ontario.
when they did, I traveled to Switzerland. So, and they were completely locked up in Switzerland. And let me tell you, Geneva was empty. The airport was empty. It was very memorable for me. So I didn't suffer personally. I carried on as normal as much as I could. But getting back to your question, no way did I influence anybody. It was just, I think they sort of see it now, the people who know me. But I would even say now is just as hard as that time. You
Really?
know, with the other things going on. Oh yeah,
Politics,
definitely.
geopolitically, or
Well, yeah, I mean, Europe is kind of suffering. It's not able to, and I don't think for a long, long time in the let's say long into the future, going to be able to replicate what it once was. So things are expensive, things are becoming more expensive, things are disappearing, and people are in denial. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have a similar episode to what I was referring to a moment ago.
right. What do you think about the hype? I mean, without saying it, I hear that there's lessening of restrictions on what we can and cannot say, but I still get my hand slapped and I'm trying to be careful. But there's the hype of the current situation coming out of Africa, which is still being hyped.
Oh, yeah, I think it's 100% hype. I remember coming out of the airport in Tanzania and they had these infrared cameras. I have never seen such a thing. And this is 2019. The place was being run by an actual biochemist. That was the president back then. And he passed away.
During the
Oh, yeah,
after,
exactly. That was
yes, yeah.
mentioned by Alan Watt
out.
himself.
Yeah.
So the president was quite outspoken. He thought this was shocking. As you would if you have any sort of training in this game.
Well,
So
wasn't he the one who sent out the motor oil for testing and papaya and
exactly,
yeah.
And
He
it
was.
all came back.
Yeah.
And he's been replaced by a 100% WF candidate, and she's been running the show ever since. That's more or less proof positive of what I was saying about the politician, the regulator, the big company, and the relationship with the public. So you don't really want anybody to rock the boat. Here in Europe, nobody's going to rock the boat. The politics here is like quite uniform. But there's like a discontent in a big way. I think you guys are a bit ahead of us in terms of how you can express yourself and that kind of thing. Here it's doesn't inspire confidence.
I just saw something. I'm not sure the status of it, and I'll have to look into it a little bit more, see if I've got this one pulled up. Maybe I don't. It's a bill in Canada called Bill C9. And let's try to find out what it is. Yeah, here it is. This was from March 20. 5, 2026. I guess it's been passed. Bill C9, an act to amend the criminal code, hate propaganda, hate crime. It says here to create an offense of willfully promoting hatred against any identifiable group by displaying certain symbols in a public place, repeal the defense based on the expression of opinions on religious subjects or texts in relation to the offenses of willful promotion of hatred or anti-Semitism, create a hate crime offense of committing an offense under that act, create an offense by intimidating a person in order to impede them from accessing certain places. And then it says it gives an example of what the symbols are that could be considered hateful. And it says, I think it said C section 83(1) for specific examples of the symbols, but that I could not find. So far, they don't spell them out within this amendment, and so it's very vague and could be just anything that someone decides is hateful. And I think that's where we are. And I think that these are the kinds of laws that they were trying to pass before 2020, but during 2020 as well, and any excuse will do. So it's not just, I mean, right now we've got anti-Semitism and what's going on in the Middle East, but it'll be for anything in which you make a person feel that their safety in entering or leaving a building, like you could be praying outside an abortion clinic, and that statute could be applied to you. For making someone feel targeted out and unsafe to enter a building.
It's all very disconcerting, even upsetting. I mean, like, personally speaking, as a as an individual, I always probably doesn't make sense, but I'm always optimistic. It's like I'm not saying I'm hopeful, or I'm not saying I don't understand, but in relation to the broader subject we were discussing, it's like there is a resilience, there's like something does give me confidence. It's like somebody who's like super arrogant, full of hubris, obviously doing this because they feel weak. I mean, we're not talking about the Canada of 1972. We're not talking about the USA of 19 I don't know, 62. UK of 1962 is a different story, but nonetheless,
UK
they're
52?
all. Oh, it was in big trouble back then, but it kind of, as we do here, they say, you got to muddle along, basically attach yourself to the US is the policy. But what if the US kind of loses it? That's disturbing, right?
Right.
It's not been really fully processed here, but anyway, there is life after the crisis. I'm pretty sure of that. Just a question of either organizing how you get there or making sure that you don't suffer too much. One of those two, right?
What is it that gives you optimism? Because I think I'm an optimistic person too, but for me, it's a that I am I, that I feel fortunate that I have a certain level of understanding about how things work that lets me maybe see through a con or say, no, that's what they're saying, but I don't think that's what it is. But it also allows me to put myself in a situation where I think I can be resilient no matter what happens. But as far as I'm not optimistic for the whole world. That's where my optimism draws a line because I saw people, for instance, just taking what happened in 2020 as an example. The mass compliance, the fact that you had a certain kind of an education that ought to be able to break through the people who are nearest and dearest to you, but you could not. So, but you have optimism despite that. So where does the optimism come from, and how does it support you in the face of what you have lived through?
So it's a very good question. So for me, like life is not really a team sport. You are an individual. So that moment where it counts, you decide, right? So maybe somebody mandated a silly mask. It's down to you to say, no, I don't wear it. Then you say, oh, maybe you shouldn't wear it to somebody you know and care about, that kind of thing, right? So, to reverse engineer that, you see that you are an individual. That's how you've always been, right? So there's this Chinese concept of wu wei, which I hope I pronounced correctly. But it's effortlessness. You sort of you try and become still. You try and become exactly this thing you are, like no pretenses, nothing. Exactly the same situation as, you're under pressure from this external thing, and you effortlessly come to the right conclusion. So that's what I try to do. And that is, I think, the least you could aim for.
That's very
The
funny.
rest. This is a bonus. Quite literally, it's a bonus because if you think about it, the everything is like blind luck. And if I look at it, in aggregate, I've been quite lucky to get to this point. So it was very easy for me in the beginning because the old man was a diplomat, that kind of thing, and I was introduced to concepts about, steak. All obsolete now, by the way, because it's about states swallowing other states now. So the small states don't really exist anymore. But you can still step back and look at things. You can still say, oh, that's how it used to be and that's how it is now. But the thing taking the step back is you, an individual. To go back all the way to the beginning of this conversation, it's a yeah, you're just a biological entity with you could be this biological entity, you could be another biological entity. You could even be related to the lab rats, which is how Big Pharma does it, until fairly recently, where they tried to mimic your genome and do things to it. But I digress. I mean, I think politics is a space we all freely vacate because we're not able to influence it. We believe we're not able to influence it, but I think we can influence it. I grew up in London. I did all my science training, and there was a guy at the top called Tony Blair, and he had this way of convincing the British public of this, that, and the other. You know, I shudder to think what life would have been like if he was the actual Prime Minister when that thing happened in 2020. He would have convinced everybody to.
They sure trotted him out though, and used him to encourage compliance. That there's no doubt that that he was brought forward as.
You know what's amazing? Like, I was working in East Africa, and I was working with a guy from the States who was working for the World Bank, and he visited London, and we sort of like caught up, and he said to me, "Oh, what about politics?" I said, "Well, this politician's been replaced by this one, and but then the guy now is just trying to channel Tony Blair." He said, "Tony Blair?" He said, "Yeah, that guy's amazing. You know, he's an American. He'd heard of Tony Blair." And I said, "Yeah, Tony Blair is like one of the most detested politicians you can imagine around this part of the world. You know, like he would never win an election now, but you cannot deny he had a talent for selling things." Which is probably why he got to the top. But anyway, I mentioned him because, like, this is all it comes down to. The politician, if he's able to sell even better, the regulator, and whoever's paying the bills. So after all that, you get to vote. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a lockdown system.
Yeah, I'd say so, but there's a way out, you know. Life is endlessly inventive and creative, and you don't have to exactly rebel. You just
Go your own
do
way.
it effortlessly. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. You use that. What was the Chinese term again?
Wu Wei.
Wu wei for
Yep.
effortless. Wu wei. Yeah, there's a
Effortlessness.
effortlessness. Okay. Yeah, there's a Japanese term that I always liked, or word, called wa, which is harmony. I heard it years ago. And so I've said before, don't disturb my wah. I've got some harmony going on here. Don't disturb it.
Well, you know, it's a good statement. I'm going to borrow that if you don't mind.
Not at all. Well, I hate to cut us short here, but I've got to hit the postal deadline. They close and I've got to get something out. The post office here is not open on Saturday. We're recording on a Friday, and so I have to get in there and get something out. But I've enjoyed this
Sure.
very much.
My
Any
pleasure,
yeah.
Melissa.
I'm sure that other people have gotten some things of interest from it, but yeah, it's an interesting world that we live in, and I enjoy talking to you too, because the other real histories that I did with you've got a very consistent through line, which is no matter what's going on, no matter what's coming, I'm going to deal with it and I'll just take it as it comes. And it might be because of your childhood and the background and all of the upheaval that you've lived through, and then you've described Africa as being a very, what could be a difficult place to navigate sometimes. And you've got this way, I don't have it down yet, but the effortlessness of dealing with it, which is cool.
Well, I try. Well, thank you. It's not always effortless, but that's the aim, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Take it as it comes.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm so glad we have been trying to catch up for a while now. Actually, I would say shockingly, weeks that have turned, that turned into months, and lots of email tag, and we did it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad. Let's not wait too long until the next one.
All right. I look forward to it, Osman. And
Likewise,
everyone,
thanks.
I have no idea really what's coming next, but I'll do it with moi. So see you soon.
Didn't give me, and the world cannot take it away.